Few watch a solar eclipse with the intensity of astronomers. Each new celestial event offers the opportunity to gather new and valuable data. We asked Dr. Shadi Habal, astronomer and faculty chair of the Solar Physics Department at the UH Institute for Astronomy, why this latest eclipse was so important.
This is the only opportunity to acquire observations of the corona. And at present, there is no other instrument in space or on the ground that provides the observing conditions that a total solar eclipse provides.
What is it that we are looking to learn from the corona itself?
Well, there are lots of things. For example, we need to understand why the corona is so much hotter than the solar surface. The solar surface is at 6,000 degrees and the corona is at several million. So we still don't know exactly what are the processes that cause this sudden rise in temperature. We need to understand the composition, you know, the chemical composition of the corona. And, for example, at these very high temperatures, the elements or the atoms are not in the in a state that you find, you know, on Earth. They're highly ionized, so they have lost lots of their electrons, and they emit light in different parts of the spectrum, and from these emission, we can learn a lot about the composition, and we can learn, we try to infer something about the physical processes that are causing these ions to reach the state they are in.
So you can actually, by looking at the visible spectrum, learn about chemical composition, is that right?
For example, I mean, what I mean by chemical composition is when you take a spectrum, let's say you, for example, when you see a rainbow, there are different colors in the rainbow,
right,
and that's due to refraction in the atmosphere. But each part of each color it corresponds to a certain element that is emitting at a very precise color or wavelength. And so from the analysis of this color, we can tell whether it's iron or if it's nickel or if it's calcium. And we can also tell how many, you know, what is its state, for example. Has it lost 10 electrons? Has it lost 11 electrons, etc.?
And only while the main body of the sun is obscured can you make,
yes,
these determinations?
That's precisely the time, the only time when you can make it, because the corona is very, very faint. So it's always there on every day. You see the sun, but you don't see the corona because it's the sun is so bright. It's just like the stars are always there in the sky, but you don't see them during the daytime because the sun is too bright.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to totally obscure the disk of the sun to be able to see the corona.
And there's no way to do that by artificial means?
There are ways to do it by artificial means, but the difference is that the moon is a very large blocker, and it just so happens that its size and the relative distance between the Earth and the sun and also the diameter of the sun is such that when you get a perfect alignment, you can totally obscure the sun. If you, with a man-made occulter, which exists both on satellite and also on telescopes on the ground, you can block the disk of the sun, but then you cannot dim the sky to the level that you dim it during a total solar eclipse.
Yeah.
So you can see the corona out to a certain distance, but you're limited in distance. And what's important for us is to be able to follow the evolution of, you know, the structures you see in the corona from the surface all the way to several solar radii. And that you can only do during a total solar eclipse.
Do we learn a little bit more with each succeeding eclipse?
Yes, we do.
And it's, I assume it's a little early to evaluate what we've learned from this latest one, but was this a
yes, from this one, yes, we haven't. It's been only a few days, and we know that we got excellent data, but we need to analyze it in more depth to understand the impact of what we have achieved.
But the feedback from the community was that you were getting good data all the way along its path.
Yes. So we had five observing sites from separated, from west to east by 1,200 miles. So we collected data in some of the sites. We had identical instrumentation. In others, we had something slightly different. So between the five sites, we collected a significant amount of data, and we got, and the quality is very high. But fortunately, before the total solar eclipse, the weather prospects across all the path of totality across the U.S. didn't look very good because of all the wildfires in Canada and in the western Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
But then somehow the skies cleared and we had very excellent observing conditions. It is very intense. I mean, it took us several years to prepare for this, to select the sites, to select the instrumentation that we wanted to use. And so it's a lot of work, and there are fine details that haunt you till the end, and you want to make sure everything's in order just before you start observing.
Dr. Shadia Habal is an astronomer and faculty chair of the Solar Physics Department at the UH Institute for Astronomy. She studies solar winds, eclipses, and solar magnetic fields.